Welcome to the Spa Girls Podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best writing, marketing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
I'm Wendy Vella.
And I'm Trudy J.
Hello.
Hiya.
Coming in from Awakuni.
I was going to say, coming in from the snow.
The snow.
Even though it's spring here.
Trudy's got snow.
Yeah.
Snow has sprung.
Spring has sprung. I'm not where I normally live. I don't think it's snowed up in Cambridge, but down here in Awakuni near the mountain, it's snowy. Yay.
Very cold. Exciting.
Because we had a terrible snow season. So, you know, if it's going to be
a
terrible snow season,
spring.
May as well snow during the spring. Anyway, actually, back to the actual topic of at hand today. Today we're going to talk about second draft. We're calling it a second draft checklist. So this is about all the things that we do to the manuscript once we've written that first draft and what we go through and check on the second draft. So we've all got kind of things that we always check through, we leave for the second draft, or we try and amp up in the second draft. So we just thought it was a cool opportunity to go through all of that kind of stuff. And actually, Wendy has this awesome list of things that she's got for what she does. And so we thought we might try and sort of go through that. Actually, and so did Cheryl. You had a good list too.
She's added to it as well.
Yeah, so we're just going to talk. And the really interesting thing is that it's going to be different for each of us, because we're like, Wendy's a full-on pantser, I'm more of a plotter, Cheryl's an in-betweeny, Shah's more of a plotter like me, you know, like it's different. Suddenly I noticed my microphone is weird, but anyway. So who wants to start? Are we?
Why don't Wendy, you start, yeah, you since Wendy. You wrote the checklist, buddy.
Oh, geez, thanks, mate. I always ask myself a few questions, actually, before I go into the second draft. I have a little bit of a break. Sometimes if I'm on a deadline, that's only a day or two before I go back and reread. But I like to sort of, you know, ask myself if my story makes sense. So by that I mean, have I just nailed all of those things that I really need to nail when I'm writing, you know, things like character goals, conflict, you know, and those sort of like setting,
let's go through each of those. But I want to stop first of all. That whole idea of having a break is really important, I think. I think that giving yourself a bit of a time to step back and kind of not, do you do that as well, Cheryl? Like, if you can,
it really depends on the timeline, but I really try to. And actually, once I've finished that, the first draft, I actually do take a pause. It's just the length of time that it might be. So I do factor in something, but sometimes you just need to switch off for a little bit.
And then I like this idea of asking questions, Wendy. I think that's awesome. So when you're saying, I ask a question, like, have I hit all the plot points? Is that kind of what you're thinking? Is that, how do you know if you've hit all the...
I think it depends if it's where the book sits in the series too. Like I write series. So if it's the first book, totally different outcome from what it would be, say, the third or fourth or fifth book. So there's those options, those things to think of too. So by that I mean, you know, is the setting the same, are the characters, you know, like where I wanted the book to go, has it hit that point, and are the characters where I want them to be? And because usually characters, I know where they are, what they're going to be like, what's, you know, like we all have our characters we like to write. And they, in most of them, you know, I have three or four characters that I usually just rotate out for each, you know, book. So, those sort of things are what I really am aiming for, making sure I have shown, not told, you know, through the thing as well.
Yeah. What about, do you ever have a point where you've got to, like, oh, there's not enough conflict, or there's not enough, the pacing's not right? Like, is it at that point you can tell that, or is it, how do you
do
that?
Conflict? Not really. I mean, I've written so probably like close to 60 books now that, you know, I probably know where I'm going. Occasionally I'll be writing a scene and I'll just think, you know, this scene's just total naff. So I will then go back and write a conflict scene, or forward and write a conflict scene, which makes that scene work better, you know? But that's just something I think is instinctive now for us.
Yeah.
What about you, Cher? Do you do the same kind of thing? Like, would you ask questions like that at the beginning? I absolutely do, because with a cozy mystery, there's a couple of things that are just absolutely important that you have to cover. Is you're putting a lot of clues through, and it just happens. You put a clue in and it doesn't go anywhere. Yeah. You mentioned it. Yeah. It's quite exciting, and then nothing. Yeah. So crickets. So you have to pick up those clues, and if you're like me, you do put it in the little table, and then you have to make sure that where they've led to. Like I might just put in highlight it in a colour, and then highlight it further over the next chapters where that clue has led, and actually the resolution of the clue. Mm. Which is different to the resolution of the crime, because you might have so many clues that aren't going to be from the actual crime. And the crime thing for me is obviously the biggest thing, because at the end you can hurry too much, I think. So the pacing of that is really important. That when the crime, the conclusion of the crime is, you know, comes to the pinnacle, that you don't hurry through it, the explanation makes sense, because you know what's happened in your head. With everything you write, you can see the scene, you've written it down, but have you actually explained it, you know? And I don't mean explained it in huge detail. I mean, so the reader understands, so they can follow.
It can't be long-winded either, right?
Exactly.
So it's got to be bomb. Yeah.
So you want to tighten and you want to expand in the right places.
But I also think you've touched on something quite important there. It's okay to cut. Okay, like every word you write is not going to be sort of, is not gold, unfortunately. And I think the sooner for newbie writers get their head around the fact that even if you're a plotter, you're going to need to cull as you go along. And because newbie writers especially are overwriting.
Well, I think all of us were. And I think... Yeah. Particularly when we all started, you're writing into the story. So often that first one or two chapters, even for me, who's a pretty sparse writer in the first draft, I didn't need all that. You're meant to start, you know, but that's I think that's a learned skill, but it's a necessary learned skill. A good book for that is called The First Five Pages, and it's by somebody weird. I can remember his first name and not his surname, but I'll put the link in the show notes. And it talks about the first five pages of anything, any story opening, that you have to grip the reader. And I think honestly these days, particularly with Kindle and how you have the preview, it's even more important, you know. If you go back to some of our favorite stories, particularly some of those, you know, the Joanna Lindsays from the 80s, you know, it was full of action, but boy, some of them took a while to get into. Yeah, we were just patient.
That's right. And people have less patience now.
I think that's really true.
True.
I'm reading a book at the moment, and I loved this book when I read it. And it's an older book, like from, I don't know when she wrote it, like maybe the 80s or 90s or something. And I read it that long ago, kind of thing. And I'm just like, this is so wordy. Like, oh my gosh. I mean,
I don't go back now.
Yeah.
I can't. My reading tastes have changed so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Anyway.
And I've always written poetry and stuff like that from when I was quite young. And so I know, and plus I'm a little bit older as well, but I know that when I first start a new book, I'm quite flowery. I'm quite, you know, like I just love the setting, and I want to tell everybody what it looks like, and all the detail of the room and where the furniture is and all that sort of thing. And that's okay to a point. It is okay to a point, but it's not great. It's not what your readers are after, not really.
Well, do you know the funny thing is that I'm the opposite. Like I forget about what's in the room. I forget to describe the setting. Like it's almost like and so I have to, when my second draft happens and I'm not taking out the extra descriptions, I'm like, oh shivers, I better actually describe where they are so people can have a sense of it, because I haven't done it. Like I just,
but then
like
they were in a room. A good editor will pick that up too.
That's something that I just know about myself that I add in at the can add in at the second draft. And what I'm doing, I have a table. Cheryl will be super proud of me, because the last three or four books I've written, I know, right? So exciting. I go back and I read the entire book again, and I do it kind of just like stepping back from it and kind of go, I have the first section of the table is what happens in the chapter. And then the second bits are like, okay, so what are the changes that I want to make? And often there's things like, oh, shouldn't they know about this thing here? And I don't think this is emotional enough. So, and I think that he should be more worried about this thing here and blah, blah, blah. And I just make notes on all the changes that I think I should make. And I just do it like from a stand back.
Wow.
Point,
so I don't, that's really clever.
Yeah. Because I used to get stuck on it. I used to kind of get stuck in the weeds when I was editing the second draft, and this helps me step back for that first thing, and I read through the entire book chapter by chapter, just a real quick description of what it is so I know and get back in the story and then what I want to change. And then when I actually go back through and do the edits, then I refer to that table and I have it sitting next to me and I can go, oh, that's right, I thought that this needed to be in here. And then I can go read the chapter again and go, oh yeah, I can see how that would work in. And and I make notes on it as I go, and it's just I find that so much easier to have that kind of sitting there. It's almost like when you just read something, I can see it in a different way than when I'm trying to edit like the detail.
Question though, are you guys working from a hard copy or are you working on the screen when you're doing that read through?
Screen, I am. Yeah,
on the screen. What about you, Cher?
Working off a screen, but I make a hard copy and what I call it's a chapter breakdown.
Yeah.
So, and then I, you know, like highlight the clues and things like that. But I just wanted to add here that I honestly, it's not really what we're talking about today, but I honestly think this is where newbies get stuck finishing a book, like being able to finish a book, because they can't see it that way. They can't read, and I know, because that's probably why I didn't get books finished in the early days, was because I couldn't see the full book. I got a certain, you know, you write yourself into a corner and you can't get out because you're not looking at it maybe even backwards to see where you went wrong or where you veered off.
Yeah.
And this way, you know, whichever part of your drafting you're up to, you can use it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree. And for me, that was absolutely it. I'd get stuck in the weeds and I'd literally feel like I was writing in a circle and I couldn't kind of, instead of spiraling upwards and out towards the end, I'd be just stuck in the whirlpool. Mm. How I overcame that was I would just really focus on getting the plot points down. And then the second time I'd add in the emotions for me. Mm. So that's what I had to do because I just had to get through to the finish line and I wasn't getting there. I was too busy trying to pack everything in perfectly in the first half. It's so hard to, you know, do it that way.
I think that's the thing. It's like the first draft, once you can kind of release that idea that it has to be perfect or you have to do everything in the first draft and allow yourself to say the second draft is actually just as important. And these are the things that you do in the second draft. And you know that you, like, for example, we talked about adding emotion. So, if you haven't, if there's a scene and you're a bit meh about it, what can you do to add it and amp it up and make it more emotional? Yeah. Like for me in the current book that I'm working on, I had a scene where she was kind of sitting there talking, thinking to herself about stuff.
Mm.
And it was kind of, and then she sort of changed her mind about something towards the end of it. And I was like, that's weird. Why would she just change your mind like that? And what I ended up doing.
And you wrote it.
I know. I was like, I wrote this stuff. Like, where do I come up with this crap? Anyway, but I added a character. A character came in who was kind of another friend, and she talked to her, and they worked out, and they talked of, and then that amped it up, and that made it something better. Like that was, and I only saw that in the second draft. I didn't. It was, you know, like I was just powering through in the first draft, and it was the second draft where I could kind of go. And I've done that a fair bit actually in the second draft of this current book, is like adding in characters instead of, there's a lot of stuff where she was by herself and doing things by herself, and I was like actually having a second character kind of to bounce off of, and
or an animal.
Or something like that.
Because animals are great.
Because a scene might be actually very important or crucial to the story, and it could be completely boring. So it doesn't mean you have to cut the scene. You just have to, like Trudy said, add in some emotion or another character. I think
it's really important to just be able to step back and objectively read it too. You know, like I know
that's a skill. That's such
a
skill.
You're so emotionally involved in it when you write it.
Yeah.
When you're finished, it's like, that was hard. Yeah. And then, well, or wonderful, whatever. But then you step back and you think, now I've got to rework this thing and polish it. And it's a real skill to have to step away and go and look at it objectively and say, well, in fact, that chapter is absolute crapola. I'm deleting it and writing another one, you know? I mean, I think it's something you have to learn.
Particularly when you're starting off and every word feels a little bit like it's been squeezed out of a rock. It's very, very hard to wrap your head around the fact that you're actually going to delete some of those words. But going back to what Trudy said, you know how we talk in just in self-publishing in general, you've got your kind of your creative writing hat and then you've got your business hat, like. And what you were saying, Trudy, about basically giving yourself editing notes was almost like putting your editor hat on. It was kind of a little bit of removing, like a little bit of distance between you and writer you kind of thing.
That's exactly exactly what Wendy was saying, that kind of ability to have a bit of distance. And I think that having the being able to put it in a checklist or a table or something and separate it, it's almost like I'm changing, like it's not something that I've written, it's something that I'm kind of assessing in a different way, and I'm stepping back and I'm reading it as a reader, and I'm like, oh, that's not very, I don't get that, why did I write that kind of thing. And it's
almost like you're reading someone else's book. You've almost got to distance yourself to the point where you're like, okay, I poured everything I have into this first draft, now I've got to step to the side and read this as a reader and go, what else, what do I need to do now?
Which why to me that is the taking as long a break as you possibly can, and I know we can't always take as much of a break as we'd like to, but taking that break really helps because you come back to it and you've just got slightly fresher eyes. You can do that kind of stuff.
And I also think too, we're fortunate to have many writer friends that we and kind of witness their process, and a lot of them will do the hand, like print it out like on paper and you know, I feel like and actually a, do the hand edits.
I don't feel like that's a
later draft, is it? For me, I feel like this
the rewrite starts. It's the second. I will I don't print
depends
anymore,
on the writer.
But once I've done the full second draft, I'll then format into a Kindle file and start reading it on my own.
Look, that's what I do now.
Too. Also, just caveat here, as we always say, and if we've been saying for the last 350 plus episodes, there is no one right way to do everything. Everybody's different. What works for you, it's a process. Everything's fine. And we're not saying this is the one way, because we have had authors on this podcast that literally do one draft. But I would say, in my opinion, that they're probably doing all of this in one motion, if you like, instead of separating out the steps as they're writing. I would say that there's part of the editor brain going on, or maybe they read the day before's work and tweak and then carry on from there.
It is a talent. I mean, that's why we pay editors. It is a talent, right? So if you can't get there, if you can't get to that stage, then you have to pay somebody else to do it. But whatever you do before you go to somebody that pays it, as we said before, is going to bring the cost down.
Yes.
And you're going to be learning.
Absolutely. And you're going to get a better quality edit if they're not trying to figure out why this character is a complete change of personality in chapter three.
So let's talk about some of the other things that we actually specifically look for in the edits as we go along. So Wendy has on her list, maybe it wasn't Wendy's, it's character goals are clear. So that's interesting, right? Like having this character who suddenly, like Shai just mentioned, changing their whole perspective or doing something that doesn't make sense. Like, do you ever have, does that happen? Like where you've kind of written yourself a character situation where it's like, oh, actually that character wouldn't do that?
I've completely changed characters before, halfway through the book. And when I realise, but I don't go back and change the first stuff until the second draft, I'll go, nah, this character's not working here. She needs to be more kick-ass, or she needs to be gentler or whatever, have a softer side. And so I'll change it halfway through the book and then go back and change the beginning when I get to it. Because if I go back and start again, completely derailed.
So push on, basically.
Yeah, absolutely push on.
No matter what happens, push on, leave a note.
Yeah. The thing about it with characters is they've got to be consistent. They're meant to do what they're supposed to do, and the supporting cast of characters are the same. If you're writing those have got to be there for a reason, and you know, to support the main characters or whatever. But if you've made your character a certain way, then she needs to act that way. But there also has to be growth. There must be growth. Characters must grow and then have a resolution at the end, or reach the point where whatever, you know, whatever is their demon or whatever's driving them, whatever their wound is, that was the word I was looking for, it's resolved.
Yeah,
because even when you make a decision in yourself, in your personal life, to make a change, it doesn't mean you don't fall off and make the same mistakes, but maybe they get less as the book goes on, you know what I mean? So
Well, you recognise them as you're doing them.
Yes, yes. Or soon after.
Yeah. And we might not always recognise it when we're writing, the first draft, but I just always think about how, like, those movies that you don't like and you don't know why you don't like them, often it's because there's a character doing something that's out of character. And so that's the kind of thing we should be looking for in our books. It's like you've set up a character to be gentle and kind, and then suddenly they're being really aggressive and mean. If there isn't a reason for them to be aggressive and mean and they're just randomly acting like that, then that's going to push people out of the story. So that's the kind of thing you're looking for, right? Like, you have to kind of either there's
and
some
like
kind of...
some authors might try and surprise the reader later on with why they behave like that. But actually, if you don't get a take on it early on as a reader, you're less likely to believe it, or less likely to appreciate the work, or even stop reading because it just, it's too horrible or too
It doesn't work. You don't think it works. You think the character's doing something, and you don't realize it's some secret surprise that the author's got later on. I think you have to set it up early, make sure that you're setting it up. So what else have we got? We've got to talk about body language. That's an interesting one. So do you go back and check body language?
To a certain extent, I think that comes with filling out the book properly, something happened, she said, but actually if you were showing instead of telling why she was saying that, then the body language is a huge clue, with her frowning or just doing something like slamming a teacup down on the table or things like that, so that's what I mean by body language, doing things with yourself or inanimate objects that shows you more of the personality, the character, or the scene, setting the scene.
Yeah, you don't need to actually say it.
No.
You can show it. And it's like when there's just two characters talking, you don't have to say he said, she said, he added. Like you don't have to do that. They're just having a conversation. There's only two of them there. You know that they're speaking.
Yeah.
So the readers are not dumb. And that's another thing. You don't have to treat them like you've got to explain everything, because more often than not, just a conversation, people get it, and it makes it goes faster, and that's another thing I check for a lot is overwriting. If I read a sentence and I'm just like, wow, that was hard work. I know that I need to take five or six words out of it or color it back or stuff like that. All of that works on your pacing. It all works towards making your book run better. And pacing's everything, it really is, because that's the reason your people will carry on reading.
Yeah. A huge paragraph, which is just in essence one sentence, is not going to enthrall a reader. It's not it.
But this, on the other side of that, it's really interesting. Pacing doesn't mean it all has to go really fast, which is actually what I used to think. It was like, it has to be more action, and you have to pile the action on top of the action. You kind of got to give them downward kind of gentler moments to relax and kind of have moments between the characters that are not kind of, oh my God, they're firing at us and we're about to die and all those kinds of things. If you're like my kind of urban fantasy books, you kind of need to have those sort of down moments when it's just, things are not quite so dramatic.
Yeah, you can all the time.
As a newbie writer, just basically I'm just talking about don't do what I do, which was really be focused on how many words you're getting down and like really thinking, okay, I'm getting to the magic 50,000 or whatever. And so you can have these conversations where, hi, how are you, blah, blah. And it's just like it could all be summed up in, so-and-so arrived and threw the bag of coffee grounds on the counter and said there. And yet I can write that in two pages and get 500 words,
So
you can become a bit addicted to the word counter,
overwriting.
But sometimes you have to learn by doing, and so it is.
And again, I'm kind of sometimes the opposite, where I'm reading back this the draft at the moment, and it'd be kind of a moment where I'm kind of like, they walked into the room and then they sat down or something, and it won't be enough, and I've described it in a really kind of like telly kind of way, and I have to kind of go and say, add in some dialogue and say, come on, we've got to
mansplained it, true.
I mansplained it, yeah. Sorry to all the men out there. But and it's kind of like, and it was just, that's how it had to be when I was doing the first draft. I was getting through it, I was kind of making it happen, filling it out. And then the second draft is me kind of going in and saying, well, that probably wasn't the best way to describe that happening. I can amp it up, I can make it more emotional, I can describe how they're feeling, I can do whatever. There'd be things that I can add into that scene that will tell the same thing but add something in. Like, there might be some point that I'm trying to make, like my two characters might be really antagonistic to each other, and there might be things that I can have them doing, like Cheryl's slamming the teapot down on the counter or doing sorts of things like that can tell the story without me having to say they were angry or whatever. And sometimes first draft I've just written they were angry, and second draft is where I can kind of go through and say, how can I show that in a better way?
That's always something I've struggled with. I kind of knew it in theory, but it's one thing knowing what something means and another thing putting it into practice. And for me, I search in the document for the word felt, and that really helps me because it's just to get it again, get it down. It was, she felt angry, you know? And so if you search for the felt, that brings up those little,
felt and feels.
I think you've also got to be really careful of recounting the same thing over and over.
Yes.
And summarizing the same thing over and over. So you made your point, you then don't have to remake it. And then remake it again. Mm. You know, that's a real pitfall that we can all fall into. Just reiterating something that has been written and then rewritten. I mean, I lost count of how many times the editors come back and said, "So you said that very same thing just up there, and you just reworded it." You know, we don't need that.
Yeah, I've sometimes read it when it's been like two paragraphs next to each other, and the first paragraph says something, and then I've reworded it the same sort of thing, and it just says it the next paragraph. I'm like,
just in case you didn't get it the first time.
Yeah. That's not a newbie mistake. No. That's just authors.
We all did it.
Writing.
So you're world building, you're not recounting. You sort of got to keep going, you know, keep building, keep growing, keep, you know, and that's the thing. Yeah. The reader doesn't want to stay in the same place when they're reading a book. It's very important that each scene just keeps moving that book on, you know?
And I think sometimes, especially when you are writing in series, you think of something that happened in another book or something that explains that person or how they look, whatever, and so you throw that in because you're not quite sure if you've written it anywhere else, which is fine, absolutely fine. But then you have to make sure in the second draft that you haven't written it anywhere else. And perhaps it needed to come earlier than when you've said it.
Like, you add it later on. I often find myself doing that second draft, adding something in because I feel like there's not enough detail. And then I get like two chapters down. I'm like, oh, this is where I put it.
I take it out the second time.
I
think consistency too is a massive one, you know.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about that, but I just keep hammering home about consistency. I think you've got to be consistent. If you say in the first chapter that they do something, then they do something. Do you know what I mean? Don't change it halfway through. And those are the things you pick up in the second draft.
Yeah.
You know, if the dog's got pink spots, then make sure it's got pink spots right the way through. Yeah. You know, like, don't change it to black spots halfway.
Yeah.
Tan spots then. Okay. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's important. Readers don't want that.
No,
that you just have lost them.
Yeah, I actually like what Cheryl was saying earlier also, but not just about the consistency of eye color or dog spots or whatever, but also that when you've mentioned something that's kind of like an Easter egg or like an important part of the story, and then you forget about it, you never mention it again. I do that quite often. I've got so many layers going on in my stories, and that's something I pick up in the second draft where I've said, they did this thing, and then it's never mentioned again. And it's like, actually, maybe I need to mention how that ended up or what the outcome was.
Take it out. I've had
all options.
Yeah, small town events that I've planned at the beginning and big banners across the street, and nothing's happened.
It was a crap party. Nobody turns up.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm like, oops.
That's a good one. I mean, I had a simple one where it's like she helped the next door neighbor's kid do an entry into some kind of recycling trash to treasury art competition or something, and then nothing. Like, it was this big scene of her pottering around with his child, and then I just added in a scene where he came rushing in and he was super excited and said that he won, you know, like, and that's all it took and it was kind of like a humanizing thing for her, so that she was kind of showing that she had a nice side and she wasn't all you know, whatever, but it just
it's important.
Acknowledging the reader, you know, like acknowledging to the reader that you know
you've been waiting for
reading it, and I've been waiting for this, haven't you? Yes, and here it is. Yeah,
I didn't forget.
No,
mostly I mostly didn't forget.
Just a shout out on world building, just go back and listen to our episode that we just, it's recently published with Nalini Singh on world building. It's, we've got such that wonderful really feedback good. From it. You know, people, listeners have just been, you know, said it was really, really helpful, and we know it is, but it's really great to get that confirmation. So go listen to that, particularly for the world building. You know, it's more than just what you think in a science fiction story. It's
an every story. I also want to just touch on chapters at that stage and finishing the chapter with a go with a with somewhere where you want the reader to go on. And so don't just finish with
They went to sleep.
They went to sleep, or the cat was blue. You know, like, I mean,
because now the reader turns off the light and goes to sleep.
Dogs, you want them to go.
Oh gosh, okay. I need to see that before I put the book down. You know,
And don't do the same thing. I've done this where I've like there's some like, oh my god, and he was standing there with a sword to his neck, and what's happening? And then the end of the next chapter is, oh my god, there's another person with a sword to their neck. Like the same ending every time.
Don't do
like
that.
Don't do that. That's bad. And no falling asleep.
Chapter openings and endings.
Hugely important. I'll even split up someone talking. You know, they'll be having a full conversation, and I'll get to a point, and then I'll go start the next chapter. You know, like, it's just
from another point of view.
Yeah, it's just a skill. You know, like, it's not a skill. I don't mean like that. I mean, it's something you learn.
Yes.
And it becomes natural. And you know, if you're writing your first draft and you get to the end of that chapter and you think, I don't know where this is going to go, so I just write, don't know where it's going.
Go make sure you fix chapter. That in your second
draft. I think that's important.
It's part of your toolbox. That's what you mean, doesn't it, Wendy?
Totally. And it's like the black moments. You know, black moments have got to be, are there for a reason when all else is, when everything is, all else is fails and there's no way they can get out of this, and you know, rah rah rah. It's that's the moment in the scene where you know, you people want it. They even if it's a small black moment, they want something, right?
That's what they're reading for.
What's
going to
happen next?
It is.
All so you've got to make sure you're giving it to them. I love what Steph Green said to us. I was just listening to that the other day, and that was last week's podcast, a recent podcast anyway. And she said, "I want to be the most, like, I want to, like, that was, it was just like the story is going to be the most, and whatever it is, it's going to be the most that she could possibly make it." And so that's kind of what you're doing in the second draft. If it's a romance, you want it to be the most it can be, right? Like, you want to amp up everything that, without, you know, making it overwritten and crazy, but like, just, you want it to be the most romantic, or the most painful,
exciting
or most
horrific.
Like, I just think that's an awesome idea, and that's what you should be, that's what you have the opportunity to do in your second draft, and I think that's what you should be looking at doing at that point.
I think overcomplicating your writing procedure, I think, you know, you learn as you go along, but I think it's really important to trust your own instincts a little bit as well. And I think that comes over time. Like, we're exposed to a lot of stuff, and this podcast is one of those, but you've also got to trust your instincts a little bit too. And you wrote the book. And so, you know, you do the second draft, and you should know, you know, you'll begin to know how it should read and stuff like that. So not overcomplicating that process, that you've got to trust yourself to get it right. And I think, you know where you want your book to go. It's just a matter of getting there. And if it takes you second, third, fourth, fifth drafts to get there, to polish it to that point, then that's fine. But yeah, just trust your processes, I think, as well, and don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah, that overcomplicating thing, because that was my whole story. It had to be complicated to be good, right? And simple was bad. And actually, I've realised simple is good.
Some of the best books I've ever read are really small, simple. In a very small setting of a week, and in a small setting of a town. But it's, the characters are just fantastic.
And there's such a skill writing that tightly as well. And I think that's particularly for those, you know, romance writers, like writing that category length, so 45 to 50,000 words, there is such a talent in telling a story, a really tightly written story, and that length of word count is, you know.
And
I think there's a lot of people who look at that and think, oh, that's easy, category romance, 45k. Actually, it's really hard. Like, I have tried
really
it,
hard,
and it's not easy to do. And hats off to all those people out there who are writing stories in that length and that genre. Like
the similar vein, those like our lovely Maya Brody, who was on talking about, you know, novellas and you know, short fiction, just telling, like, again, it's a real skill telling it in a shorter word count.
You still have to cover everything off.
And, yeah.
You know, maybe there's not so many characters and there's not so much in the way of scenery or anything like that, but you still have to, when you're doing that second draft, all those points still have to be covered.
Absolutely.
And and working out what works for you insofar as, are you a character-driven writer, or are you, you know, do you like the world-building story thing?
Yeah.
I think, and then just embellishing on that and understanding that, for me, I'm a character-driven writer. I like characters. Dialogue is everything to me. And sure, I still have a setting, but it doesn't, my books revolve around my characters more so than my setting. Whereas a lot of people, the setting is a character.
Yes.
You know, and probably shares a bit like that with her, you know, cozies. But I think when you understand how you write, everything runs a bit smoother, you know?
And that understanding, though, comes with time. It's not absolutely something that you can fast forward through to,
exactly.
Which would be lovely. But,
you know what you love to write.
Yeah.
You know what's hard and what's easy. And that's
I always think the good thing, like the second draft, is you're kind of reading through and you're going, oh, this is a bit boring. And actually then it's you're kind of like, well, if I'm bored, and if I'm finding this section boring, then my readers are. So it's kind of like watching your own reaction and how you yourself feel. Then you kind of know that's going to be maybe how your readers are going to react. So, yeah, I just think using your own intuition, using your own gut feel, knowing what you like and trying to use all of that kind of stuff is going to be awesome.
And getting one scene to the other. You know, like the thing is, we can't just write action. Right, we can't write action from one to the other, so we have to get from one to the other, and those scenes you need to build on, you need to sometimes that is a tough scene to write, going from A to B. So you're getting in a car and you're going from A to B and it's a drive, but those scenes can be worked because you can have someone in the car with you and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, you can't have action all the time.
Need to give the reader a little breather,
and you can use up some of that time saying they sat in silence, or, you know, something like that, to denote the time has passed quicker than if you'd had a conversation for like 3 hours, you know. You don't want to be doing that.
I mean, I've been doing a little checklist, so I mean, I'm quite happy to do that up, and I can pop that in for you. And I mean, I think we're probably hammered home what we need to.
I did want to just give one tip, if that's okay, if you guys are okay
with that. Go for it.
If you have children and you have pets in your books, you have to show them somewhere. And you can't just leave a child off the page just because they're not in the room. You have to explain where they are or whatever. And the same with pets, like in Cozy Mysteries, they have to feature. So you know, another thing to do with your highlighting is to just make sure that they're in every scene that they need to be in.
That's right. I agree 100%.
My final tip is, he's a lovely man that we met, Jim Bell, James Scott Bell, and he's got a really good book that's been out for years and years and years and years, and it's called Revision and Self-Editing for Publication. So if you're a type of person like myself that loves to have a book on the shelf, that's a good one.
That's good. I love James Scott Bell. He's awesome.
All right.
So I think we gave you lots to think about and go for.
Hopefully, with your checklist.
You
can use Wendy's checklist when it comes out. We'll put it up somewhere. But for now, I think that's another episode of the Spa Girls podcast done and dusted. So thank you all for listening to us. I've now got children walking around behind me. They're all waiting at the door to get in.
I think they're throwing snow.
My puppy.
So better go.
Trying to get in.
But where can we be found, Sha?
We can be found at spargirlspodcast.com, and we can be found at Patreon at Spa Girls Podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.